to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Crocher. The 14th Annual Emerald Awards for Environmental Excellence honored several innovations in conservation and new technology to protect our ecosystems. Instrumented watersheds, oil sands reclamation, integrated forest management, and something as simple as keeping cows out of streams. These were all big winners at the Emeralds. And looking to the future, Canada will play a big part in the upcoming International Polar Year. It's only been 50 years since the last one. And Alberta's David Hick is making sure polar scientists from across the country get a piece of the action. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Each year during Environment Week, Albertans who've gone the extra mile to do something worthwhile to protect or enhance our natural resources are recognized at the Emerald Awards for Environmental Excellence. This year's ceremonies were held at Jack Singer Hall in Calgary. And top honors in the category for research and innovation went to Syncrude Canada, and that's for its research program on instrumented watersheds. When the oil sands are mined, digging the giant pits removes all the forest, soil, wetlands, streams, and groundwater. The Instrumented Watershed Program hopes to speed up the reclamation of the mines, doing in a few years what would take Mother Nature centuries to replace. On hand to accept the award was Clara Kualitsa, a senior environmental scientist with Syncrude Canada.
An instrumented watershed is an area in either an undisturbed boreal forest area or in one of our reconstructed boreal forest areas, where we track the movement of pretty much every drop of water that lands on and moves through and results in wetlands and rivers that come off of our reconstructed or natural landscapes in the boreal forest.
How do you track them?
Through very detailed instrumentation and a lot of hard work by a bunch of amazing students.
Now, that's something that you brought up in your thank you speech, because you won the Emerald Award in this category for research and innovation, and you said you just couldn't do it without these grad students. Tell me about your grad students that have been working on this project.
Well, we're really fortunate in that we have a range of research programs going on looking at how to reconstruct watersheds and ecosystems in the boreal forest. So we have a range of students studying everything from groundwater hydrogeology, wetlands, all the way to toxicology and plants. And they come from all over Canada to help us figure out how boreal ecosystems work, so that we can then reassemble them after we've mined out our landscape.
You've been working on this for quite some time. What are some of the things that you found out over this last year?
Well, we've learned that that it's really essential to salvage soils in very discreet layers, because the forest floor is critical for reestablishing native species in our landscape. We've also learned that you need to layer soils in these systems so that they store enough water to support long-term tree growth, as well as to release enough water to make sustainable wetlands.
Why is this important for the work that Syncrude is doing in the oil sands?
It's really important for our work because we are long-term players in the region, and our operation is meant to be a long-term sustainable operation, and that means returning the landscape back to a capability that's equivalent to what was there before we utilized it. And we're really committed to sustainable development and reconstruction of the landscapes that we utilize.
That's a pretty tough row to hoe, though, when you're taking away meters and meters and meters of what was there, and it could be in the order of hundreds of years before it ever replaced itself naturally.
That's very true, but part of the point of the research that we're doing is to determine how we can accelerate that process. There's no doubt that we're essentially starting from zero. It's like primary succession, but by careful planning of how we salvage our soils when we go into an area to mine them out, how we reconstruct the landforms to make sure that the water can move through those landscapes and through wetlands sustainably, we really feel that we can accelerate that process so that you're not waiting 100 years before the system is back to something that you feel is a boreal ecosystem.
Is anybody doing this anywhere else?
There's no one else in the world who is reconstructing boreal landscapes at this scale. It is truly a unique area and a unique achievement in the oil sands.
What's it mean to you getting this Emerald Award?
Well, I just feel so blessed that I have just the most amazing job in the world, where I get to work with these students who are so dedicated and love the work and come up with innovative ideas that help us really reconstruct landscapes so that they really function properly, so we know that we are a sustainable operation. And I get to work with the best people in the world, so I'm just flattered that I could be here.
Now, I have to ask you this question, because the last time we spoke was actually about 15 years ago, and you were telling me about the crops of Alberta. So how did you get from the crops of Alberta to instrumented watersheds?
Well, now there's a long and sordid story. Well, when I was working for Alberta Agriculture, I was doing my undergraduate degree in agriculture at the University of Alberta. And I've always been interested in soils and how they contribute to our well-being in this province. And I went on to do graduate work in soil science, in how you reconstruct soils and protect them from various impacts. And following that, I ended up at Syncrude, where they employ me as an environmental scientist to apply my soil science degree. So that's how it went.
Well, congratulations. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
That was Clara Kwalitsa, Senior Environmental Scientist with Syncrude Canada. Syncrude won an Emerald in the Research and Innovation category for its research program on instrumented watersheds. Protecting biodiversity in the boreal forest is always a hot topic. And Ainsworth Lumber of Grand Prairie rose to the top in that regard, winning an Emerald Award in the Large Business category for its Integrated Resource Management Program. Dave Beck is the Divisional Forester with Ainsworth.
Well, it's a program we initiated in 1995. We put aside a certain amount of money each year to fund research into things like biodiversity, ecological management, wildlife habitat surveys, and any other projects that fall within Integrated Resource Management.
Why have you done this?
We did it initially. It was a commitment when we were awarded the timber from the province, and it was a 5-year commitment. But we elected to continue after that, even though we weren't compelled to, because we saw such great results out of it. And there are a lot of issues in Alberta that need to be looked at. So, us, in conjunction with a lot of other partners, have funded this research.
You say you got a lot of great results. Give me an example.
Well, there's lots of published reports that have come out. Ecological basis for stand management with the Alberta Research Council. We've done lots of operational research on stand structure, mixed wood biodiversity, just 29 projects in total.
How has this helped your business?
Each of these is a little stepping stone towards finding solutions to some of the issues that we face, whether it's biodiversity management or wildlife habitat surveys, so we know what's out there. So all those are just stepping stones along the way to finding solutions.
You're operating in the Grand Prairie area. What's the forest like there?
Well, in the Grand Prairie area, we have it goes right from the boreal forest right up to the subalpine. So we have a real mix, dry mixed wood, boreal mixed wood, subalpine and alpine. And most of our activity is in the lower part, what I call the mixed wood, but our interests cover the whole area.
What products are you producing?
Oriented strand board is what our mill produces.
What scientists have been involved with you? What organizations?
I would guess we've been involved with 50 to 70 different partners over the years. You know, other forest companies, obviously, but also from the University of Alberta researchers, Alberta Research Council, the Sustainable Forest Management Network. So quite a variety.
How does this compare to what other forest companies are doing?
I think a lot of companies in Alberta are funding research. It seems to be that there's a real environmental conscience out there, and companies recognize that there are things we don't know and we need to need to get on with finding out some of the answers.
What does it mean to you getting the Emerald Award for this effort?
It's a real honor. We're pretty proud of what we've done in Grand Prairie and what the company's been able to achieve. And when we look at some of the other nominations and what there are some great things going on in Alberta, so we're really honored.
Thank you very much and congratulations.
Thank you.
That was Dave Beck of Ainsworth Lumber in Grand Prairie. Ainsworth picked up an Emerald Award in the large business category for its integrated resource management program. Another shining example of how collaboration can result in big gains for the environment is the Cows and Fish program. Also into its 14th year, Cows and Fish helps educate ranchers about how to manage manure, watering, and stream banks to protect fish habitat on streams going through their land. Cows and Fish won the Emerald Award in the Education by Organization category, and Noreen Ambrose of Lethbridge is the Cows and Fish program manager.
Well, about 1992, a bunch of ranchers got together in the Southwest with some fisheries people who were interested in keeping streams and healthy for fish production, and they got together and sort of said, hey, we can do good grazing management and have fish, and that's sort of where it came from in 1992.
What are some of the principles that you follow?
I think one of the key is respect and recognition of the value of the landowner, both in making the decisions but in taking ownership of what they need to do. We're really there to help them, so that's one of the key ones. The other one, of course, is collaboration and partnership, recognizing that none of us is as smart as all of us, that, you know, for instance, the landowner has learned a lot from wisdom of living off the land for maybe generations, and the agencies can bring science and information. It's putting all those together that's really key.
What are some of the things that you tell ranchers?
I think one of the things is to help them recognize that sometimes we've lost collective memory of what these landscapes used to look like or could look like. And so sometimes it's retuning our eyes and going back and saying, well, what could this place look like? Maybe it never has in your memory, but could it look different? And, you know, and also recognizing even small things make big changes.
How widespread is this program?
We work all across Alberta, from the furthest north parts to the furthest south, east and west. And we've also done some work outside of Alberta, across Canada, and our materials certainly, our extension materials go across Canada and beyond as well.
What's it mean to you winning this Emerald Award?
I think it's really great. It's really an honor, especially with the other people that were up for the award or organizations who really are doing great things as well. But I think it's really nice to be recognized as making an achievement and having a contribution.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
That was Cows and Fish Program Manager Noreen Ambrose. One of the people instrumental in getting Cows and Fish off the ground was Lorne Fitch. I first met Lorne in 1989, a time when he was campaigning for a better deal for our fish. I asked Lorne what got him interested in this issue in the first place.
Well, a combination of anger and frustration. Frustration in terms of not being able to make much headway as an agency person. I think anger in terms of recognizing that these things take a lot of time and that often government programs don't last long enough to actually have the desired results. And so I recognized, along with my colleague Barry Adams, that to be successful, we had to interject something into this to give it some long-term sustainability. Because the only two things that work in conservation, I've learned, are continuity and persistence.
What is the problem between livestock and fish habitat?
Well, first of all, there doesn't have to be any problem. The problems exist because we don't see and share the landscape in the same way. That's why Cows and Fish is such an important adjunct to this, because it helps tune people's eyes, gives them an understanding of ecological functions, which are the basis of all the goods and services and products that we enjoy, like forage for beef production and like fish for recreational pursuits. So if we all think about health of the landscape, then we can start to share this landscape and to have all of the attributes that a healthy landscape can provide.
So is the problem that the cows get in the water and it causes problems for fish habitat by destroying it?
I think the problem is more about management. The problem is recognizing that cows, like cattle and people, like to linger in riparian areas. This is where the shade is, this is where the shelter is, this is where the water is, this is where the forage is. And so if we can somehow help people understand that there are ways of getting cattle out of the riparian area through distributional aids, then we can start to aid them in protecting a very important part of ranches and farms for livestock production, as well as an important part of the area for water quality amelioration, for biodiversity, and recreation.
How do you get them out of the riparian area?
Well, it can be excluding cattle from riparian areas, which is the extreme at one end. And in some cases, riparian areas are so sensitive and so highly valued for other purposes that perhaps we shouldn't graze them. But a majority of our riparian areas can be successfully grazed, and with such simple things like moving the salt away from the water, providing off-stream water development. In fact, some of the work that some of our colleagues in Ag Canada have shown is that animals, livestock, will accept water out of a trough 8 times out of 10 over surface water. And so simply by pumping water away from a stream or a lake or a wetland, cattle will actually take that water in preference, and they won't overuse, trample, cause problems in riparian areas. So relatively simple solutions, low-cost solutions, I might add as well.
When you look back to the time when you were frustrated and this program got underway and where it's at now, what does that tell you about the state of how we get along in terms of dealing with environmental concerns?
Well, what it tells me is that communication is a tremendous aid to figuring out middle ground, to understanding what the solutions might be, and to take those solutions and share them with many others.
What does it mean to you tonight, being here with the group and getting the Emerald Award?
I think the most profound feeling I have is seeing my colleagues being recognized for the tremendous work they do across Alberta.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Cheryl.
That was Lauren Fitch, Alberta's provincial riparian specialist and founder of the Cows and Fish Program to protect riparian habitat, the winner of the Emerald Award in the Education by Organization category. I also spoke with Noreen Ambrose, Dave Beck, and Claire Kwalitsa. International Polar Year is coming in 2007. It will be a time of great effort on the scientific front, not just for Canada, but many other countries that are interested in the importance of polar research to our climate and our economic well-being. Considering there have only been 2 such polar years over the last century, there's a lot of excitement brewing in anticipation of the event. Dr. David Hick holds the Canada Research Chair in Northern Ecology at the University of Alberta, and he's also the Executive Director of the Canadian Secretariat for the International Polar Year.
The International Polar Year is an event that occurs relatively infrequently, about every 50 years, and it is a coming together of the world scientists to investigate the polar regions of our planet. And it is an opportunity for coordinated activities that would only be possible under the umbrella of something like a polar year.
So Canada is just one part of this.
Canada is in a very important part of polar research. We do an awful lot of work in the Arctic. But for the polar year, there are now 42 countries that have committees working on their programs for IPY. And there are scientists from almost 100 nations involved.
Now, what would everyone's interest in the North be?
I think there's a number of reasons why we're interested in the North, and probably the dominant one is related to climate change and global warming. The melting of the polar ice caps, the opening of the Northwest Passage, the Northeast Passage to shipping, those are really the drivers, and those affect many, many things that influence human activities, including the potential economic development, the pipelines, the oil and gas development, the mining, gold, diamonds, things like that in the north that require transportation networks and access to resources. With the melting of permafrost, the changing of seasons, all of those things are, I think, getting people's attention and making them more interested in the north.
And actually, it's not just the North, is it? We have to think of the South, too.
and the South Pole. And I think we often don't think about the South Pole. The South Pole is interesting because one of the results of the last polar year, which we know now as the International Geophysical Year of 1957 and 1958, was the Antarctic Treaty, which created the Antarctic continent as a scientific reserve. And under the treaty, there's no mining, there's no economic development, there's no territoriality in the southern region. And so science has really prospered in the last 50 years in the Antarctic.
What is actually going to happen during this period of time? Are there going to be research projects going on?
There are many research projects being planned. One of the greatest opportunities we have is to bring people from many different disciplines together under IPY, under the International Polar Year, from social sciences, health sciences, physical sciences, biological sciences. And many of the programs that are being planned are very transdisciplinary in their approach. And there are projects that are very big projects using icebreakers and satellites, and there are projects that are relatively small, looking at social change in Arctic communities or reindeer herding or what the influences of economic development, rapid economic development in the north might be.
Who has icebreakers?
You'd be surprised how many countries have icebreakers. Canada has a number of icebreakers, and here we're talking specifically about research icebreakers. So Canada has a dedicated research icebreaker called the Amundsen, and it's sort of the core, it's the centerpiece of a network's centers of excellence called ArcticNet that's based at the University of Laval. There are icebreakers that belong to Italy and to China and to South Korea, as well as all of the polar nations, the Nordic countries, Sweden, Norway, as well as Russia and the United States.
What would China and South Korea's interest in the polar region and having icebreakers, what would it be?
Well, I think they're interested in climate change just like we are. All coastal states will be affected by sea level rise. They're also interested in natural resources that exist in large quantities in the Arctic Ocean. So gas hydrates, the sort of energy sources of the future, something they're very interested in. And I think there's geopolitical reasons why they're interested in the poles as well.
This is being called an International Polar Year, but it actually is longer than that. Why?
Well, the year itself begins on March 1st, 2007 and runs for 2 years to March 1st, 2009. So to call it a year, yes, this could be confusing. But because the activities, the research activities occur at both poles, and because the seasons are offset between the North Pole and the South Pole, it's necessary to run this over two calendar years in order to allow for full seasons of research at both poles.
What sort of research is going on in Alberta right now with regard to polar research?
Well, Alberta, the universities in Alberta have a long history of leadership and involvement in Arctic and polar research, both at the University of Calgary, where the Arctic Institute of North America is based, and there's research there involved in climate change and natural resources in the north. At the University of Alberta, there's a large number of faculty members and students, in excess of probably 200 each year, that go north and conduct research. Some of the really interesting projects involve looking at the paleohistory of Arctic environments. John England in the Department of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences studies sea level change by looking at fossils along the seabed and changes in geomorphology. And in the Department of Biological Sciences, Andy DeRoche is studying polar bears and marine mammals in Hudson Bay and in the Nunavut and NWT and looking at how they're affected by climate change and contaminants and their population dynamics and how they're used by local hunters and things like that. So there's an awful lot of things that are underway already. And the International Polar Year should really help to strengthen that work, to help Alberta to become a magnet for training graduate students, and also partnerships with northern communities and northern governments, how to work more closely on areas where we share interests.
You have a Canada Research Chair in Northern Ecology. What is it that you're looking at?
Well, my own work is focused on plant-herbivore interactions in the Arctic. Most of our work is in the mountains of the Yukon, looking at small and large mammals and how they utilize resources in alpine meadows. And I have a student working in Svalbard, the archipelago of northern Norway, looking at goose plant interactions. So the real focus of my own work is how herbivores are supported by vegetation in the Arctic, where the growing season is very limited. The snow-free season is sometimes only 2 or 3 months, and yet we still have these large populations of small mammals and caribou and sheep and geese, and they seem to thrive and do very well in northern environments. So all that is affected by climate change as well. So we're seeing things that we haven't seen previously, and it's a very interesting time to be studying northern ecology.
With the International Polar Year coming up, and you're going to be focusing on the North, there'll be a number of conferences around the different issues. What do you see as being the key issues?
Well, there's a number of key issues. One of the most important ones, in my view, is increasing our awareness of northern environments and the change in northern environments. And one of the benefits of having more activity and conferences is that this is something the public can participate in as well as allowing different scientists from different disciplines to work together. Many of the issues in the North are cross-cutting. We can't just deal with one small piece of the puzzle. We need to talk to each other, and something like IPY creates an environment where there is an increase in activity. There's more opportunities to share that information and to disseminate that information, and I think that has lasting benefits. We don't want IPY to just be a two-year burst of activity where people have a lot of fun and then it's back to business as usual. We want to see this as an opportunity to raise the bar that will support polar research in the long term over the next decades.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you very much.
That was Dr. David Hick, Canada Research Chair in Northern Ecology at the University of Alberta and the Executive Director of the Canadian Secretariat for the International Polar Year. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Research Council, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Ingenuity, the University of Lethbridge, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the Alberta Conservation Association, Science Alberta Foundation, Ducks Unlimited Canada, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.